Don McCord.
Johnny, your presentation shows commendable preparation, and that's always great. I also appreciate your superb spirit, and the meat of your message certainly commends you, as well as the best message itself. And so today I stand in humble salute to you for this remarkable presentation, Don. I love what you said about the evangelist's piety, about his sincerity, about his righteousness. This applies to the preacher, whether an evangelist or not. Lately it was said to me, and I say this with regret in my heart, and I hope I live to the time to never hear it said again, that if you want to know the gossip in the brotherhood, all you need do is talk to the preacher and his wife. They can tell it all. They will live long enough to never have this said again. Fellow preacher, and preachers' wives. I'm not so sure that that was quite a fair assessment, but nonetheless, the brother made it. And so what you had to say about all of these qualifications, piety, sternly, that was wonderful. Sometimes our evangelists who go beyond the sea to take the message are not called an evangelist. They're called the missionary. I submit to you that that's wrong. Why not just simply call them an evangelist? Because that is what they are, and that is their function, whether they are here in this good land or abroad. Then the last while we've heard of televangelists, this irks me righteously. I submit to you, and Johnny, you pointed out that, and God bless you for that among many other things today. John pointed out to us that God said evangelist in the church. I submit to you today, that's the Church of Christ and nowhere else. You will not find them in the denominations. You will not find them in the cults. You will not find them in sectarian religious bodies. The evangelist sent by the divine hand in the church. In the Church of Jesus Christ. That's the only place they are. And today, with righteous indignation, I register my disapproval of the use of that term on that board, evangelist, to apply to people outside the Church of my Lord. Applies then only in the church. And one more point, not a question necessarily, but I love this. And you're aware that everybody doesn't agree, Johnny. You mentioned the laying on of hands, fasting and prayer as a procedure. I believe it's the binding procedure, not only for evangelists, but elders as well. If it is not the binding procedure, then what is wrong with it? There is some procedure that is used, be it ever so passive. There is some procedure of recognition. If prayer, fasting, laying on of hands is not the binding procedure, then since some procedure is used, what is wrong with the procedure that Johnny read and that we can read? Thank you again, Johnny. You've helped make my day.
been done?
To the board.
Johnny, thank you for the message. As you probably know, and most of us recognize, that in the United States, we probably have less than 20 congregations that have elders and deacons. And I was wondering, as I sat there and listened to your message, that how many evangelists that we would have today if the qualifications for evangelists were taught as often as the qualifications for elders are taught. And then my question to you is this, and you hit on that near the end, but I'm concerned about this part, and particularly, that is the training, the schooling, and the testing that a young man must go through, or should he go through, before he is recognized as an evangelist. And I know as boys, as we went out, as you mentioned in the introduction of your lesson, that we took a briefcase and hit the trail, and someone signed on a piece of paper, and that was made our day when they recognized us as an evangelist. So I would like some feedback, either from you or someone, on the training and the schooling and testing that a young man or a person must go through to qualify as an evangelist.
Well, as to the first part of your what you mentioned there, I find it inconsistent for brethren to split hairs and do the way they do about evangelists, about elders, and then be so lax on evangelists that just anything that comes down the pike can answer the Bible demand of an evangelist. I don't believe that's even good common horse sense, to say nothing of fulfilling the demands of Scripture. And some of them that never saw an elder in their lives can see evangelists everywhere. So it's a little bit inconsistent, something we need to look at. Now, on the training of an evangelist, it was interesting to me to read the Millennial Harbinger and to see that even though Campbell believed in a college and university, and he'd had a lot of university training himself, Campbell didn't consider himself an evangelist primarily. He didn't think that was the work of evangelism. And those men who were in the Reformation of the Restoration movement believed that the way to train evangelists is for an older preacher to take a young man with him, well recommended by a congregation, and to put him through the labors and the work of an evangelist. And I don't know that we can improve on that. Some of the ones that we have in our preaching force today receive their training that way. And it's a wonderful way to do the work without having to assume the responsibility for a while. In fact, Timothy went with Paul for about 10 years. So, we have certainly a Bible precedent for it. But now, that's one of the duties of an evangelist, you see. I can't force other evangelists to take young men with them and encourage them to preach. I've tried to do my share of it in my life, but that's not something I can make other evangelists do, but I can tell them that's your duty to train other men.
John, I'd like to make a comment on that. I traveled with two evangelists or three in my early days, 18, 19 years of age, and that's just about the extent of it, was the traveling. So what I'm getting at, it involves more than just traveling.
Sure.
And listening to that man give presentations. What I'm concerned about is that training that this young man must go through in order to be recognized as an official evangelist. I just don't believe a boy can follow a man around for a year or two and not be put through any type of training and be qualified as an evangelist. I just don't see that.
Well,
and I don't believe that you believe that either.
No.
I believe that you believe that there's some type of schooling or training. And I'm not talking about
right.
That he goes through with the older man.
Well, what I used to do when I had boys with me, and I suspect that all of them that were ever with me can tell you that we had a few tests on their knowledge of the Bible. We would also do things like study, and at my suggestion, I would choose books for them to read and study. I would recommend also a library for them to get and to read. And then, as far as doing the work of an evangelist, the best thing that you know you can do is just take someone with you when you're out actually doing the work of an evangelist, knocking doors and visiting people and preaching and talking to people. You know, that's where they get their training. I mean, I don't know how to formally instill that any more than just day by day persistent effort. But it's like you said, that traveling is not the idea behind it. That's not the idea inherent in preaching, just traveling. But the idea is using that time when you're with someone to the best advantage. And I think that's up to the individual advantage evangelist to try to do that. But I would have it agreed before I ever took a young man with me, now, buddy, this is not going to be a courting session. You know, it's not going to be an occasion for you to meet all the eligible girls in the brotherhood. It's not going to be a party, and it's not going to be a frolic. We're going to get out and knock doors. We're going to do the work of an evangelist while you're with me. And unless you're willing to do that, then be gone, because my time is too valuable to waste with anything else.
Question. the areas that are not producing, you know, does the evangelist have the right to say, look, you know, I can't continue here? Do we have the responsibility or the right, I guess what it all boils down to say, look, brethren, here is your job. You know, we can only do so much, and you've got to take it. And if you don't do it, if it dies, it's going to be your problem. I mean, you know, the responsibility rests with you.
Well, that's a problem I know you have faced in Honduras, and like you say, it's been in this country too. You know, I've had men to come to me and say, do you think I can justify my staying at this particular place or this particular locale? And really and truly, unless a man is doing the work of an evangelist, I couldn't say that I could justify it. And so I think the same would be true with the situation in a foreign work as well, that there comes a time when, you know, the evangelist is sent by the congregation and he has to make that judgment. And it's a tough one to make sometimes, as you well know.
If the congregation, you know, if the congregation has the right to demand, you know, certain things of the evangelist, does the evangelist have the right to demand certain things of the congregation?
Oh, I think so, without a doubt. Absolutely. In fact, I don't feel like the evangelist has to answer alone. I feel like that sometimes the congregation that sends him out needs to be apprised of certain situations and help him make that decision, because it's either the saver of life unto life or of death unto death in some situations, as we well know. Merle has been in situations, and I know of one particular one, where, as he said, you could continue to hold services from now on, but there's no real hope of ever establishing a self-sustaining congregation. And so the question is, do we just cut our losses and say we're going to have to go somewhere, you know, where there is a hope, or do we, you know, just more or less take the bread of life from those people and say, you know, you've had your chance and that's it. It's a heart-wrenching decision that has to be made. But I feel that probably the evangelist just has to look at the situation and, you know, just make his own determination to the best of his ability.
I have seven names here, and I have about 15 minutes, so we'll get all seven in. And when you ask John the question, be right to the point. TBA.
After Paul and Barnabas returned from their first journey, in Acts 14, chapter 27, it says, they gathered the church together to Antioch, and they rehearsed all that God had done with them, and had opened the door of the faith of the Gentiles. Ooh, wrong place.
I would think it was. I haven't examined it minutely, but it seems to me it is.
And then also that is again repeated in the 15th chapter, the 40th verse, when Paul and Silas went out. This was after, you know, the dispute over John Mark.
Mm-hmm.
It says they departed, being recommended by the brethren unto the grace of God. Would this mean that they went through that process again in chapter 13, verse 3? Prayer, laying on hands, and fasting?
Well, I suppose it might be, it could be, but it'd be speculation on my part to say. I wouldn't really see that they would need to have that done.
You made the reference in your talk that in Acts 13 and 3 was their appointment to the office of an evangelist,
yeah,
to go and evangelize. A lot of people look at that. There is an appointment to do a specific missionary work in that area. And then from that that was through, and that was, and that was finished. Do you have any comment on?
I wouldn't find fault with that, because I believe it's with reference to the deacon, and even maybe with the elder, there's no specific word for office. It's just more of a work. And we think of an office as a position in our time, you know. But that's not the idea of it in the Bible. It's to a specific work. And so I wouldn't really have too many problems with that.
What would you say then in reply to the statement there in 13 that they were separated by the Spirit? And then concerning Timothy, Paul said in chapter 1, verse 18, 1 Timothy 1 and 18, the gift that was given to me by prophecy, that's 4.
Yeah.
What,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
118, again, it refers to the prophecies that went on before.
I don't know what about the prophecy, but to me, the fact that there were supernatural events commingled with it, I don't really see that it changes the... I mean, we believe, I think we've already demonstrated here today that we believe the Word of God will do everything for you the Holy Spirit did in the first century, you know, and so...
Could it be what we practice today, the brethren say, I know what you're like and you can do this work. You know, I don't know if there'll be prophecies in that sense.
Well, I rather think that was a more specific thing, and I really don't know what it was meant by it.
Richard Bunn?
Johnny, I really enjoyed your talk. It was sort of moving. I'm just asking these questions for information's sake. I don't know, and I disagree with what all you said, but it sort of is on that idea of GV was getting at. Now, if a man were ordained with fasting, prayer, laying on of hands for the eldership in Congregation A, and then he were to move to Congregation B, of course, he's no longer an elder. If he becomes an elder in Congregation B, he goes through an ordination process, the same thing all over again. Now, I have problems with church autonomy. When we ordain a man as an evangelist in Congregation A to do a work, and then 3 years down the road he moves and goes to Congregation B, that may be from the East Coast to the West Coast, and he says, well, I'm ordained over there, so I don't have to be ordained here, and he has evangelistic authority, I think that violates church autonomy. I'd like for you to explain that to me.
Well, I don't feel like that anything the evangelist would do would violate congregational autonomy, because I don't believe he has that kind of authority, you know, to step into a situation where he's been called and act in an authoritarian way. I just don't believe he can do that. I believe he does it by influence and by moral power and suasion rather than, you know, by dint of his authority, so to speak. That was the point I tried to make. And as far as him being ordained in Congregation A, you know, in the case of Saul and Barnabas, that didn't preclude their going to all these churches, you know, and establishing those churches. And I just feel like that maybe we have gone far afield in our conception of what an evangelist is, and, you know, what his work is. Well, I think there could be, but by the same token, you know, if this man is recognized as an evangelist and met the qualifications, you know, he should have the same qualifications there that he would back where he came from. I mean, if he's qualified according to the teaching of the Word of God. I don't know the fact that I planted a congregation over here and I established them. I think the Bible demands that I have a concern. And we have an example of Paul going back and confirming them and seeing how they do. But Does that preclude anybody else doing that? I wouldn't think so.
On that, the elders are over at a local congregation only. The evangelist, when he's ordained, is not for just one congregation. He's not ordained for that purpose. He's ordained, as you pointed out, to preach the gospel and set in order things at once. So any congregation that he goes to, he has the authority to do what he can do. Whereas the elders here at Wichita Falls have no right to come to Edmond and start telling us what to do. But an evangelist can teach there what is taught here. Harvey.
The question came up about training the evangelist, you know, traveling with another evangelist. Don't you believe that by and large that most of that training should be done by the local congregation before that the young man goes with the other man? In other words, there's got to be some potential there. Both the evangelist that takes him and the congregation that's going to be behind it, both should recognize it's not just a boy with two or three sermons. Well, I mean, he's a fellow that has trained, and he's already pretty well qualified to be an evangelist, and then that older evangelist can just brush him up on the things that he needs as he goes with him, because I feel like that a lot of that training should already have been done in the home congregation before that he's ever even considered to go with somebody. And then I think this would help this situation a lot. And then, even on top of that, a lot of it's right in the heart and in the dedication of the man involved. Even if he seems to have the qualifications, and the preacher and the congregation think so too, still it has to be in that man's heart in order for him to make a preacher and to make a success out of it. So I think, just like an elder or a deacon, they pretty well prove themselves before they ever ordained. If they didn't, you wouldn't consider ordaining them. No. I think the same thing is true with an evangelist, a man becoming an evangelist and training with another one, that he ought to pretty well, Paul and Barnabas both were ready for that work, see, when they were sent to it. And so, and I think Timothy showed the potential before that he was ever considered to go out and train in that work.
Well, I think undoubtedly that is true. Plus, Timothy was trained at home. You know, I mean, he got a lot of training before Paul ever got him. And he was trained at home, and he was trained in the local congregation and well reported of. And so I think it would be a mistake for anybody for example, the leadership of the church, say, we got a boy over here, he's kind of giddy and wild, but we thought that, you know, if he could go with you, you could probably help him and get him out of a lot of that stuff, you know. I guarantee you that won't work. Will not work. No, he's going to be doing that work at home, you see, just like Barnabas was before Barnabas was sent. He was already a teacher, so he just stepped up a little bit and became an evangelist. And I think that's where you're going to find the evangelist, not with these boys that, you know, want to be a playboy of the brotherhood. That's not what we need.
Charles, good.
I appreciate, Johnny, very much what you had to say. And you know, I feel that this topic is one of the most critical topics in the church today. I think one thing that needs to be said, and one thing that's a great problem for you brethren who are anxious, is the fact of the way that leadership perceive your responsibilities and your role in the
Well, that's a good question. Probably one I ought to give some thought to before I answer. But I think for one thing, the congregations, especially the leadership in congregations, know young men that are thoughtful, that are pious, that are capable, and I think they should recommend them and find the best person possible to bring those gifts to fruition, fulfillment. And as I said, there wouldn't be anything wrong with rewarding somebody who takes on the obligation of trying to train one of these young men. You know, in a way, it's wonderful to have someone with you to help you, but it's a responsibility too. And it's a burden many times, and it poses problems. You have to think not only of yourself, but somebody else also. We have some who have trained a lot of preachers, and some who haven't trained, you know, I don't know if they could point to one. So it's something that everybody has a responsibility to do, though, I think. So I think you could help, number one, by helping us find young men. Most of us, most preachers that I know who go and work and do evangelistic work all the time are thrilled to find a young man that has some promise and some dedication and some piety, and they don't mind having a boy like that along. But one that's already graduated, you know, that knows it all, you can't teach him anything. He's in it for a frolic and a big time, and to become the Brotherhood Gigolo, why, you know, I'll tell you what, you just are wasting your time with that kind of a situation.
I like a lot of faith.
Johnny, I thought your talk was masterful. I really did.
Thank you.
And relative to what Charles mentioned and what Orbelie said a moment ago and what you yourself said, I think one of the problems that we face is we have a lot of congregations want a good speaker, and some young guy comes along who can speak well, and so they snap him up before he's ready, and then later somebody has to go untangle the mess, and we need to correct that, and some of what Charles was saying would do that. And one thing I thought of, Charles said, what can leaders and elders and do to help? I think one thing might be, I don't know right off the top of my head of anybody in the New Testament who negotiated his own contract with the church. Paul sent Timothy places when Timothy was ready. And if the local churches will train these young men and be responsible to send them with older preachers when they are ready to do that and have proven their sincerity, gravity about the job, and then older preachers will finish their training and send them where they are needed, that would greatly relieve a lot of these problems. And we wouldn't have fellows who, just because they can make a good talk, going somewhere, getting involved over their head, and having a lot of problems to correct later. Thank you.
I don't have any.
One thing, just very quickly, on the qualifications that you mentioned in 1 Timothy and Titus. I've heard those called qualifications several times, and I wonder about that, because as I understand it, Timothy and Titus were already evangelists before they received this instruction. So I just wonder if they're better called guidelines rather than qualifications. What things they had to meet before they could become evangelists.
Well, maybe so. I don't know that we could really show where, you know, they were appointed to the.
One thing I'd like for you to comment on is the fact that Paul and Barnabas were sent out from Antioch, from a local congregation, quartermasters, and is it more scriptural for an evangelist to be responsible to one congregation to be sent out to different locales rather than congregation simply calling the best evangelist and say, come live over here and help us? To what extent, say we have an evangelist that is being sent out by a congregation, should they not instead contact that local congregation that's sending him out and say, we have a need over here. Could you send this individual?
Well, I think that there's probably a lot of areas in which we could improve upon the organization cooperation there in the church. I really do. And ideally, you know, I don't know that an evangelist would have to have an association with any congregation except one. There's one little interesting thing about Philip the evangelist. The last time we see Philip was in the 8th chapter of the book of Acts, where the Bible says he was caught away, that the eunuch saw him no more and was found at Azotus and so on. And when you run into Philip 28 years later on one of Paul's missionary tours, he's still in the same place. And yet he's the only man in the Bible that's called an evangelist. You know, a lot of times people think, well, if you stay in one place, you're not an evangelist. But I don't have any idea that he was sitting there doing pastor work. That's not the idea. He was out evangelizing, but that didn't mean that he had to just stay with a suitcase all the time, you know, away from his home. So I think that it's not the place that a man works, but it's the work that he does when he's there.
I think, too, some emphasis should be given on the responsibility of the local congregation that is overseeing the evangelist to be communicating with him to determine when his work in that locale is coming to an end, and their responsibility to decide where it's best to send him next, where he is going to be, rather than the evangelist just accepting what he's going to do.
Well, I think it would be wonderful if, for example, we could develop a evangelist, say right here in Wichita Falls, and he proved to be so excelled so much that if there was a need over yonder or over yonder or over yonder somewhere, this church could just send him over there and say, you stay till the work's done over there, you know, till you get it in hand, and then we need you over here. And that to me should be the role of the church, and I think most evangelists would like that. They don't like to have to try to pick a place and then work their themselves to death trying to produce results, because they know if they don't produce results, it's going to all be over in a little while, and they'll be looking for another home, you know. It should be taken into account that the church makes a decision like that, and then if they make the wrong decision, so, well, we sent that boy over there where there wasn't any prospects, you know, instead of, well, that boy went over there and there wasn't anything for him to do. So, again, I say the church should bear part of the responsibility, ideally, of trying to make the decision where he goes and how much labor he puts forth. And a time should come when he should tell them the situation frankly, and they should say, well, we'll either have to cut that off or you stay with it or whatever, you see. That shouldn't have to be his decision alone.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good job.
We've gone over here, but it seems like every session we can nearly go over. And I really hate to close this, I really do, but we've got to move on. I do want to make one observation. Charles asked the question how you could help an evangelist. I think one of the best things through my years of experience is to know that my brethren trust me, they back me, and they stand by me. I am in favor 100%. When I ask a person or my congregation, when we ask a person to hold us a meeting, when we've asked these brethren to go to Africa, we have complete confidence in them. I don't require them and my brethren, we don't require them that they've got to tell us every minute where they've spent. We trust them. We sent Benny Cryer. We sent Brother Doug. We sent Greg DeGoff. We've got James Harden on the list, got some others on the list, and when they go, we want them to know that we are 100% behind them. And not only that, that we're going to back them. Now, what I'm simply saying is, and Johnny brought it out real good, this man that's dedicated, when he knows that you trust him that way, he's going to put out a lot more work and do a lot better job.